30 years ago tomorrow, global warming became a national issue. That was with the testimony of James Hansen, then the director of NASA's Institute for Space Studies. Hansen told a Senate committee in 1988 that a greenhouse effect had been detected, and in his opinion, it was changing our climate. Our next guest is with us to talk about how that testimony went over then and how the reaction to it brought us to where we are today. Riley Dunlap is the Regents Professor and Dresser Professor Emeritus at Oklahoma State University. He was one of the founders of environmental sociology, a field that studies the interactions between societies and their natural environments, and he's an expert in the political and sociological impacts of climate change. Riley, thanks a lot for joining us today.
My pleasure.
Well, take us back to 1988. James Hansen, who's become a household name in the global warming issue since then, goes before this Senate committee. Talk about the message he delivered there.
Well, he was very explicit. He said the evidence suggests that the climate is getting warmer, and he was convinced that it was due to the, quote, greenhouse effect, unquote, you know, produced primarily by human contributions to carbon pollution, you know, burning fossil fuels and so forth. And it got, you know, a lot of headlines, first cover story in the New York Times and so forth, really got a lot of attention. And frankly, it seemed to really put climate change, well, in those days we called it global warming, on the agenda. It got definitely on what we would, as social scientists would call the public agenda. People talked about it. People were writing about it, talking about it. Real quickly, the following May of 89, a Gallup poll found 63% of Americans saying they worried about, in those days they used the greenhouse effect, or global warming was the label they used, a great deal or a fair amount. And from basically out of nowhere then, Hansen's testimony and, you know, all of the discussion that followed, again, really put global warming on the public agenda.
Now, it's a polarized issue now, but in that early aftermath 30 years ago, was this a bipartisan concern about global warming?
You know, I don't think there was enough government action efforts to do much to really honestly gauge that. It's clear that it was not nearly as polarized as now. But the people who were most supportive of Hansen, like Timothy Wirth in the Senate, a senator, they tended to perhaps be somewhat more Democratic than Republican. But there was no organized opposition. It wasn't like Democrats are concerned about this and Republicans are not. It just hadn't yet become such a political issue. So in that sense, you could say it might be more accurate to say it was nonpartisan than bipartisan. How's that?
Sure. And a lot of your work, you've talked about this a lot, how we went from there to where, you know, if you look at opinion surveys, there's a huge partisan divide over the existence of global warming, the causes of it, and the action it requires. What started to happen in the years after that testimony that started to drive that polarization?
Well, it's a long story, so I'll try to be short. Interestingly, you did get an organized, what some people would call a counter movement or a campaign, to undercut the scientific evidence. People who had something to lose, perhaps, from dealing with climate change or at least getting rid of fossil fuels, basically mounted a campaign. Most infamous nowadays, of course, we hear about ExxonMobil, but it was a lot of fossil fuel companies. The American Petroleum Institute was heavily involved. But they were immediately joined by some conservative think tanks, especially the Marshall Institute, but other major ones. Perhaps the logic seems to be that dealing with let me rephrase that. Our society so relies upon fossil fuels that trying to reduce emissions is going to inevitably require some major changes, probably major regulations that are anathema to a lot of conservatives. So most people, including myself, argue that you got this organized denial campaign, or some people call it the denial machine, and it definitely began attacking the evidence. And I, well, just stop me if you want me to
no, keep going.
Clear something. Okay. One of the key things we now know is the way you do that is you, quote, manufacture uncertainty. In the Reagan years, conservatives and Republicans had really attacked environmental regulations quite directly early on. And then there was kind of a backlash. And so by the 90s, they learned that because regulations require typically some evidence, you know, we have a problem, we need to solve it, it's easier to go after the scientific evidence. So a lot of people use the phrase manufacturing uncertainty. And that's what this combination of forces did. They used public relations firms. They had a few contrarian scientists to try to rebut people like Hansen. And it was truly an organized campaign, and it really got momentum after the Rio Earth Summit in 92, and then the formation of the United Nations Framework for Climate Change, and then the Kyoto Protocol was, you know, put on the agenda. And so by 97, when it came time to vote on that, and the U.S. refused to, the U.S. Senate refused to endorse the Kyoto Protocol, you really had this organized campaign. And I think that's where the polarization, certainly the politicization, excuse me, I'm tongue-tied today, comes from.
Talking to Riley Dunlap from Oklahoma State University about global warming, climate change, how it became polarized in the 30 years since it really became part of the national conversation. Riley, how has public opinion moved on climate change in that 30 years?
Not a whole lot, to be honest. Clearly, they're somewhat more concerned now, but here's what, basically you get some waves. Excuse me. You get waves both in organized opposition and then in the resulting polarization. So if I could just to link up to what I said before, what happened is you got this peak of opposition in the 97. And then when George W. Bush, the second Bush, comes into office, what we call the denial campaign, they realized that he wasn't going to do anything. His administration wasn't. So they sort of toned down. They ramped down their efforts. Think tanks weren't putting out as much anti-climate change material as they had been. And then Al Gore comes along, though, and gets with Inconvenient Truth. You get the Emmy, the Nobel Prize. And all kinds of attention. They start ramping up their efforts. Then it kind of slows down again. But boy, when Obama comes in and the Democrats for that brief window there had majorities in the Senate and the House, and they were considering things like Waxman-Markey, that act, you just get what I call denial on steroids, the organized denial machine just went into overdrive, producing propaganda, under again manufacturing uncertainty, attacking climate science, specifically climate scientists and so forth. Well, those efforts are sort of mirrored in public opinion, so you sort of get some waves. I would say that the best data we have from Gallup really starts at about 2000, and things picked up again with Gore and so forth. The public gradually became more concerned. Then it dropped quite a bit. But the key to, and lately it's been back and forth a little bit, and as people talk more and more about extreme weather events and so forth, it looks like concern is kind of slowly going back up, but it's still not as high as it sometimes has been in the past.
Talking to Riley Dunlap from Oklahoma State University about when climate change became a national issue about 30 years ago after key testimony before a Senate committee and what's happened since. And you can join in at 800-642-1234. Why do you think climate change became such a polarized issue here in the United States? Do you remember some of the early news stories about global warming? Are you disappointed with how far we've come in addressing it? Have you seen progress you're heartened by? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. You can also email ideas@wpr.org. This is Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. We continue our conversation with Riley Dunlap, environmental sociologist from Oklahoma State University, about when climate change became a national issue about 30 years ago and how the country reacted then and since and why it became so polarized. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Is climate change on the top of your agenda? Are you worried about it? Do you have questions about campaigns by the fossil fuel industry and others to contest the idea of human-caused climate change? Call in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or email ideas@wpr.org. Riley, while this oscillation has been going on in terms of public opinion, what's been happening with the scientific evidence on climate change in that 30-year span?
Well, it's clearly become much stronger, and that's the interesting thing, and points to the success of this denial campaign because the evidence is so much more compelling now than 30 years ago, and yet public opinion, public concern has only crept up a little bit. And if I could just add one thing, when you asked me to give those trends, and I said, really, there hasn't been, if you go back 30 years ago to where we are now, there hasn't been that much overall gain. It's really critical, though, and in the context of what we're talking about, essential to note that there has been one shift below the surface, and that is there used to be about a 10 to 15% difference, perhaps, between self-identified Democrats and Republicans, and now it's often a 50 or 60% discrepancy between the two parties, or partisans of the two parties, in their views on climate change. So when we look at times and we see very little change or these little ups and downs in public opinion, what it's masking is that Democrats, and the same thing for self-identified liberals, tend to have become somewhat more concerned about climate change over 30 years, while Republicans and conservatives have become less concerned. And I think that's a critical issue to keep in mind.
Let's go to our callers now. Barbara is with us in Port Washington. Barbara, hi.
Yeah, hi there. I've always felt that instead of using science to prove that there's climate change or the deniers say there's not enough science to prove it, why don't we err on the side of caution? And just in case it happens to be true, then we will be better off rather than just ignoring it.
Barbara, thanks a lot for that call. Is there an argument there? I guess a better safe than sorry, if you're not, even if you're not completely convinced, Riley?
Yes, certainly. And, you know, another very famous climate scientist who sadly died a few years ago, Stephen Schneider, used to talk about insurance. He said, you know, the odds that your house is going to burn down are pretty slim, but you don't want to be unprepared should that happen. And we take out insurance in all aspects, you know, for all kinds of issues to protect ourselves. And I think the same mentality could apply to climate change, just as the caller said, better safe than sorry. Because people argue shifting to renewables and so forth has a lot of positive benefits. It's certainly not going to cost us all that much. And why not do it?
Thanks for the call, Barbara. We'll go next to Nate with us in Milwaukee. Nate, hi.
Hi. Thank you for having me. I would say that part of the reason Republicans are drifting so far away from actually dealing with the problem is because of money. You've got groups like the Koch brothers who by themselves can spend almost as much, can probably spend more than the actual political party officially does. And I mean, I've talked to an old aunt who mentions how ponds are flying sooner than when she was younger. So you can see it. And on top of that, you've got situations like flooding up in the UP or a couple of years, not that long ago, here in Wisconsin. And that's going relates to the heavier rainfalls coming down all at once and washing out roads and stuff. So we actually are seeing damage going on right now. But alongside the damage and the risk that poses to people, you've got a lot of basically liars out there, and they're getting paid to put out more lies.
Nate, thanks for the calls, O'Reilly. A couple points there, Nate, talking about the influence of money in politics, not just in forming public opinion. Is that something you're watching?
Yes, and other sociologists are doing so as well. There's no question. It's interesting. He, Nate, I believe it was, pointed to the Koch brothers because for ages they kind of stayed under the radar, but about 7-8 years ago, people finally started paying attention to how much money they were spending, and they certainly have been major funders of climate change denial. But with these different laws that we have now, and since Citizens United, you have a so-called dark money that very wealthy people can, rather than give directly to a conservative think tank who puts out anti-climate change material, they give to something called donors trust, and that in turn gives the money out without identifying who gave it. So we have a real problem. We know that the climate change denial campaign has enormous funding, but it really takes a lot of work. A colleague at Drexel, Robert Bruhl, has published on the funding, and where people are doing their best to track it down, but there's certainly big money. And, of course, the fossil fuel companies have enormous resources. You pointed to something also, and that is the way the Republican Party has gone, because it seems to me what's really happened is that they've drifted more to the right. You have two things going on. You have a great amount of a deal of fossil fuel money funding almost totally Republicans now, hardly any going to Democrats. So Republicans have this material interest. They like to get funded for their campaigns. But then they have the ideological interest. You know, global warming is going, dealing with it will supposedly require all these regulations. And when you kind of combine a material interest with an ideological interest, it becomes very powerful. And that's why I think we see just so little concern for climate change among the vast majority of Republican politicians these days.
Nate, thanks for that call. Go next to Tom in Port Wing, Wisconsin. Tom, hi.
Hi. I'm old enough to have grown up in a time when we were told that the next ice age is right on our heels. Then we went to acid rain was going to kill off all the forest. And then we went to the idea that the ozone layer is going to kill us all. We've heard all these stories of this great catastrophe coming our way. And so far, they have been proven to not exist.
And Tom, thanks for the call. Riley, your thoughts?
Well, these are, I'm going to guess this fellow listens to some talk radio and watches Fox News and some other things, because these are well-known themes. First of all, scientists for a while, including the Stephen Schneider mentioned earlier, they were doing a variety of work, and there was a very brief time that they thought it might enter a cooling period. They did more research, said that's not true. And the idea that there was some big consensus around the idea that we're going to enter a new ice age anywhere comparable to the current consensus around global warming is simply not true. Now, when you get to acid rain and ozone, I don't think those were non-issues, but they provoked action. Government took steps. Remember the various measures that were taken to cut back on chlorofluorocarbons and so forth. So we acted in ways that reduced acid rain, and we acted in ways to reduce the ozone hole, although that problem certainly hasn't gone. So the issue now is, will we act in ways that also reduce the possibility of, you know, catastrophic global warming? That's a phrase that the opponents like to use. Anyway, so I would just take issue. I think the Ice Age really was a phony issue. There was never a strong scientific statement that that was going to happen. And the other two, the science was pretty darn good. It prompted amelioration, and we're better off for it.
Tom, thanks for that call. Very briefly, Riley, are you hopeful that opinions will change, action would be taken on climate change?
Well, I go back and forth. Here's what a really hot research topic now is what the next to the last caller alluded to. People are seeing, you know, extreme rainfalls, droughts, you know, all these kinds of things that do seem increasingly abnormal. And to the degree that the media labels it such, there are a lot of researchers that say, you know, personal experience, perceptions, so to pardon the phrase, but perceptions of reality will overcome ideology, and people will finally admit, yes, we are already experiencing the effects of global warming.
And we'll leave it there. Thanks to Riley Dunlap from Oklahoma State University talking about climate change, public opinion, and politics.